It is, Ian Ryan, with your pre-match warm-up. It is Chelsea this weekend for the Reds. I've got Neil Atkinson, Phil Blundell and Kiefer McDonald with me for this one. Louis Benevente to come a little bit later in the show. But Phil, the manager's not doing his press conference as of now when we're recording. He's not doing it till a little bit later this afternoon. So we're going to do a bit of a general kind of look ahead to the game. It's not been the season we all wanted, but ultimately Liverpool are very, very close to securing Champions League football. And from a next season point of view, it's absolutely imperative that they do that. And the sooner the better.
Yeah, I would quite like the season to be over at 12:45/4:45. There, 12:45, I mean half two, don't I? But you know what I mean? If there is a world where the season can basically be finished this weekend, and I'll be absolutely delighted if we can get to that point, because I think it's been tiring, it's been draining, it's been very little fun, and football is ultimately supposed to be a bit of fun. It's, as Kiefer's mug says, it's a leisure activity. It's not supposed to be as intense and annoying as this season's been, and it would just be quite nice to get over the line. I say quite nice, that's not probably the best representation of what I mean, but I think the bare minimum for Liverpool should be qualified for the Champions League. It doesn't mean you look at it and go, oh, successful season, excellent, great, sorted, we can forget about anything, we don't need to do anything in terms of anything with players, with coaches, staff, with managers, whatever. It just means that you can achieve a base and look at how you improve on it in the summer. And I think that is, everyone knows that whatever your position on anything is, I think we're all in agreement that they need to do things this summer. I think we're just not particularly all in agreement with what the specific things are. So just give yourself the opportunity to not be affected in the long term, I think. And that's what we look like doing.
I think that's it, Kiefer, isn't it? I mean, listen, there'll be loads and loads of time to analyse the season. We'll do it on the LPL Wrap, no doubt about it. We'll get stuck in as and when the season finishes. But in terms of being able to plot your way through next season, Liverpool will need Champions League football because, you know, simply they'll need footballers. Mm. And to get those footballers, to attract them, to be able to afford to buy them, Champions League football enables all of that. So it's massive that they secure it. And if they can do it this weekend, then fabulous.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, you want to be shopping in the kind of the top market, don't you? And Champions League football allows you to do that. I think, you know, it was a bit different a couple of years ago, maybe when you had a manager like Jurgen Klopp and you finished outside of the Champions League places. He was almost like as charismatic to, you know, even if you didn't have that football, players would still want to come to the club. I think obviously Slot's tenure is maybe a bit different. So I think Champions League football is absolutely imperative, and not only for the players you're signing this summer, but also the ones you signed last summer. You know, you sacked Wirtz, you know, they're on big wages as well, Champions League wages, Premier League title winning wages, and they'll also, you know, they'll need to be justifying that wage in the Champions League, helping Liverpool, you know, in the competition next season. I think it's one of those seasons where I think, you know, November time, December time, when it was the run of, what was it, 9 losses in 12 or whatever it ended up being, you know, Champions League felt like it was kind of slowly slipping away. And I think if you'd offered anyone, you know, even a fifth place finish at that point in time, everyone would have kind of taken your hand off, snapped your hand off, sorry. So I think, you know, to kind of get it done with a couple of games to spare is certainly a better situation than I was kind of, you know, forecasting it a few weeks ago. But I think that, as Phil says, I think a lot of people just want this season to kind of be done with. It's not been great pretty much from the start for a number of different reasons. So I think if Liverpool can finish it in the top four, it's not a successful season, but it's, as you say, it's kind of as you were, isn't it?
A couple of months ago, Neil, when I'm looking at this game, I'm thinking this could be the one where, you know, you're head-to-head really with Chelsea and the winner maybe secures Champions League football. Now, maybe Liverpool end up just getting there because others have fell away. Chelsea being one of those teams where, you know, they currently find themselves ninth. They've lost 13 games this season. What type of game, what type of Liverpool performance are you expecting this weekend?
I think it massively depends on availability. You know, the manager hasn't done the press conference. We don't know what the answers to those questions are. But ultimately, Liverpool need to be able to have cut and edge. You know, there was a lot wrong in the game against Manchester United, but the one thing that, you know, for me was the bearable piece of mitigation was that Liverpool rocked up to play an away match in this league at the moment, and also an away match against a team who were in the top 10, and they had no cutting edge on the pitch. And you're in a situation, I did a trend show with Josh, which is coming out later on today, and in it we talked about away games, and I got the data of everyone's performances this season on expected goals for away games in the top 10, and only one team are markedly better than 0.0, i.e. not in the minuses, and it's Man City. Arsenal are a coin flip for away games against the top 10 over the course of the season. Everyone else is negative. So what that means is that you're not going to have the balance of chances for away games in the top 10 on your side. That means you need finishes. for as and when that comes. And if you don't have finishers on the pitch, then you're just going to find it exceptionally hard. And Liverpool did not have finishers on the pitch. The one finisher that they arguably did have on the pitch finished. You know, it was albeit a straightforward goal for Gakpo. But we've seen Gakpo tap things in from the back post all the way through his Liverpool career. Gakpo is a bit of a finisher, and he got one decent opportunity to finish and he did it. Apart from that, Liverpool, you know, it's excellent from Szoboszlai, but Liverpool just did not have cutting edge at any point over the entirety of the match. And at the key point where they could have done with it at 2-2, there was really none to be had. I think maybe, in hindsight, the manager should just immediately get Inge Mower on, because it would have shook it up. And if even if he only had 20 good minutes in him, they might have been more useful from 60 to 80 than where they ended up. So I think that the funny thing that's all about this game is there's a chance Liverpool could pick a team where the third most likely scorer is Virgil van Dijk. Well, that's no place to be. If, on the other hand though, Liverpool could maybe start Inge Mower if Isak was fit, if therefore they could use Gakpo as well in an attacking area, suddenly that's all, and Florian Wirtz is there and present on the pitch as well. All of a sudden then, well, you know, Van Dijk's fifth or sixth likely a scorer, and that's a better place. It's still not ideal. You still want him even lower than that. But Liverpool, that's a step forward. It's a stride forward. And I think that this is the key sort of question, really. So what do you expect from the game? They seem a pretty sad, miserable lot in a number of ways at the minute. But they will actually have, you know, the third highest scorer in the country is João Pedro, level with Semenyo. It's mad to think that, and it maybe says something about where this league is this season, that he is the third highest scorer in the country and he's not torn up any trees, but he is the third highest scorer in the country. And Liverpool haven't got that and haven't had that. So if Isak ends up being available, then Liverpool will be in much better nick. But if he isn't, then Liverpool are just in a position of potentially showing that they're a better side and a better, more collective side at the minute than Chelsea, but not being able to find the way to break into the opposition penalty area, and then when they're there, stick the ball in the back of the net. And that's the hardest thing in football. It's why centre forwards cost the most money, earn the most money. And if you haven't got them, then you're just going to find the game harder.
Yeah, it could be another weekend, Phil, where they're having to fudge it a little bit and just make their amend. We don't know the exact situation yet, but you can't imagine he's playing 90, even if he does get himself fit. Neil's mentioned Gakpo there. I think you and I have been very much in the camp of where we're a bit sceptical maybe of Cody Gakpo in terms of what he offers. I don't think we're kind of maybe his biggest fans or have been this season. He's taken a fair amount of criticism, but I actually think in the last few games he's been someone actually who's shown a little bit, if I'm being honest, and actually his performances have probably been above the average of the rest of the team, I'd say.
Yeah, my thing with him has never been that I don't think he's good enough to play for Liverpool or bad or anything like that. I just think in this season, where he's probably Liverpool's first choice left winger, he's over promoted and he's above his station and what he can offer for a club of where we are. Like you watch that PSG Bayern the other night and you look at their wingers and that's where I want to be.
Yeah.
He's nowhere near any four of
don't mind him,
he's nowhere near any four of those wingers. Absolutely, yeah. Right. And I include the player we had last season in that, and I don't think it's, and the player we had last season is, I think, probably the worst of the four. And Diaz is, I would say, as a winger, a level or two above Gakpo. I don't think that's unfair to say. He's got a role to play. I just think he should be Liverpool's fourth or fifth best attacking option. And at times this season, for large parts of the season, he's probably been Liverpool's second best. And then you're sort of looking at things and it's like, well, why have Liverpool struggled? And you start to look at stuff like that and you think,
I don't trap Phillies first.
Exactly. And this part of the reason I found some of the reaction to Sunday a little bit mad in some quarters. It's like you look at that team and it's like, well, how many goals would that attack score over the course of a season? I don't think that team that we started, if it was our first choice team, would get to 50 goals in a season.
Yeah,
which is a problem, as you say, and that's exacerbated when you go into somewhere like Old Trafford, isn't it? It's, that's not to say, great, this is brilliant, all these players are brilliant. It's just a sort of an acceptance of reality almost. And
but when you go down 2-0,
exactly,
it makes it so much harder. Everyone goes to Trafford and go, you know what, 0-0, yeah, no problem with it, you haven't got any forwards, just make sure you don't concede stupid fucking goals.
Yeah, and both goals are completely avoidable. I mean, the second one should have been disallowed. I think that's fair to say. The first goal was, I think, Robertson's header is just really, really, really poor. Like, there's one.
Get a mad game.
I'd rather just head it up in the air. Just head it up in the air. There's no part of him that should be heading the ball in that, like, that is literally the worst place he could have headed it, other than into the goal, I think, because I think if he'd have headed it to the penalty spot, it wouldn't have it would have just been a bit of a scramble where does he head this straight to their man, and you're a bit like, come on. And it feels like stuff like that's gone on all season, and we've had situations like Gakpo being sort of promoted, and he's then had to try and do things that he shouldn't have to do because we put ourselves in stupid positions time and time and time again. It looked like for a period on Sunday we were going to get out of it, but then again you sort of see the lack of cutting edge. I mean, there's the little goal mouth scramble thing where I think Lammens makes a save from a ricochet. I've only seen it once and it was sort of 50 yards away from me, so I might be a bit wrong on that, but I felt like, oh Christ, that was nearly in.
Yeah,
but it wasn't that Liverpool had created an opportunity or anything. They put a ball in the box and a ricochet nearly went in, and that was almost how you look at it and thought, that's Liverpool's way home, and that's not an acceptable way home for Liverpool over a long period of time. And that's sort of, I thought last weekend encapsulated the season incredibly well from start to finish on pretty much every level, with the exception of someone getting injured during the match.
Expecting reaction the weekend in terms of that Old Trafford game, obviously, you know, they do almost get something out of it. And I take Phil's point, I think it's fair, because, you know, they find themselves at 2-2. But I think for the first half, it's a pretty, I would say, abysmal performance. I do take the point around the forwards. It makes it well harder, of course. But you can help yourself by not doing silly things and putting yourself in certain situations, which makes it even harder. It's a 12:30, which is never ideal in terms of maybe getting the atmosphere going and stuff like that, and maybe players kind of flying into tackles from minute one. I think kickoffs do play into stuff like that. But are you expecting a bit of a reaction on the back of it, what happened last week?
I'd hope so. You know, regardless of the kickoff time, you want to see the players with a bit of pride, don't you? And like, you know, it hasn't been the season that they all thought they were going to have. But, you know, if you can't get yourself up for, you know, Chelsea at home, you know, the same with United away. It's those big games where, regardless of wherever team is sitting in the league, it's a big game. You know, Anfield should be up for it. But as I say, from a personal perspective, I think there's a lot of, I was looking at the team on Sunday, and I know there's a few players missing, but like, you can put question marks over so many of the players. So it's like, it's not like they've got a free pass now, even, you know, Champions League is secured on Saturday. I think there's a few of them who'd be maybe looking over their shoulder and thinking, you know, as Alexis McAllister, for example, I think his, you know, future age could be up in the air in the summer. You know, so if I'm him, I'm thinking, well, I want to end the season strong. You know, it's not just about what Liverpool can achieve. It's about, you know, reminding the players, the managers, the supporters of what he can do. And I think there's a few players like that. So I think if you can't get yourself up for Liverpool versus Chelsea at Anfield, you're probably in the wrong profession, aren't you? But yeah, I think it obviously largely depends kind of on the team as well, in terms of, you know, who's fit. You know, even, you know, both ends really, the goalkeepers, and then obviously the forwards, if you've got someone like, you know, Vissak can come back. But then I suppose the question with that is, you know, is there any gain in rushing him back, kind of thing? If you didn't train for a lot of last week, it's a groin injury. And, you know, is there an element to maybe just sit him out of this one and think, because it clearly, I think he's playing catch up with his fitness all season. And it's, you know, you kind of got to the end of it now. I don't think you're going to gain too much out of playing him in these last couple of games. But I think he, you know, they need options, don't they? And I think there's something like Ngamo. I think it might be a big ask to start him, but, you know, I think that's something that could get the crowd up. And I think it was the same when he came on last week. I think he did really well in the kind of 15, 20 minutes he played. I know there was obviously maybe he was at fault for a part of the fault for United's winner. But in terms of like going to Old Trafford, I think if you can go there and kind of, you know, take on a few players and want the ball at all opportunities when your team's, you know, up back against the wall, maybe, I think that says a lot about you. So I think I'd like to see Ngamoa start. I think that could be something that maybe kind of gets people up for the, because that's what you want to see, isn't it? I think, you know, so much of this season, it's not been fun. I don't think the football's been particularly great to watch. There's been times at Anfield where, you know, it's gone side to side or backwards and whatnot. You just want to see someone stand them up and beat them, you know, in a one-on-one. I think Ngamo does that. So, yeah, I think I would like to see him play. I think that could kind of contribute to maybe getting people up for the game.
I think in terms of risking people, Ian, I'm quite struck by if fitness at the minute is a risk for one or two for any reason, that we've got a bit of buffer. And also, other results can go in our favour over the course of the weekend. So even if we don't get the result we want on Saturday morning, other results can bend our way. And then if you do feel like you need to take a couple of risks, there's two games left to take them in. And I wonder if that might be the view that the manager / club take as a collective. Because, I think it's just sort of worth saying, to finish ahead of us right now, of the sides that can, they do all need to practically be perfect.
Yes.
So, and that's the situation that's now been created. And one more positive result for Liverpool in the three win for Liverpool in the three remaining games effectively secures it. So I just sort of wonder if there are doubts, Liverpool may well be best served to err on the side of caution within that, and then be able to, you know, manage those players. That doesn't mean tomorrow's going to be a battle of laughs, again, for reasons that have been discussed, frankly, you know, by any stretch of the imagination. But Liverpool have just got to, you know, they've got a responsibility, obviously, not to be rushing anyone back. And so I think it becomes a little bit of, you know, you can almost have a watching brief weekend and go, well, what happens if we play out a turgid, horrendous 0-0 draw at Chelsea that makes everyone question the purpose of existence? The league table at the end of the weekend might be remarkably healthy for Liverpool at that point. And, you know, that will undo.
I'm pretty sure Ryan is saying that you could secure Champions League football with a draw.
We could secure Champions League football with a draw.
The results would have to go the way, but you could do
You could secure Champions League, that's the point. So Liverpool could secure Champions League football with a draw. They could end up having a buffer on Villa with a draw, as mad as that sort of sounds. You know, there's loads of ways in which Liverpool could just, as I say, choose to have a watching brief and accept that at the end of that, the untold level of psychic damage done to their supporters is offset by Champions League qualification.
How much do you think they'll really push, Phil? Because I think third probably feels a little bit out of reach now, unless United go and lose all of their games, and then they're probably going to have to go and win all of theirs, or certainly kind of win two and get a draw if United to lose all of them. Do you think they will maybe just err on the side of caution with one or two with that in mind? I mean, obviously they do play Villa before, obviously the end of the season. You think the manager's got an eye on, does it matter that much if a finish fifth? I mean, if his future's secure, which is what reports are kind of alluding to, that he will be here next season, do you think it really matters? Do the optics matter that much if he comes third, fourth, fifth, given what we've seen for most of the season?
I don't think it makes a great deal of difference to anyone. I think third's probably too far away now, isn't it? I think last weekend was basically a proxy third place playoff, I think, in terms of if we'd have been 3 points above them, I think we'd have then probably... they'd probably just come third. But it wouldn't have been... You are effectively changing any opinions based on one win away at Old Trafford, which just feels like a flawed way of doing things, doesn't it? You shouldn't be... It's like when teams go, oh, well, he's won the FA Cup, we can't sack the manager or whatever. And it's like, well, if he'd lost the FA Cup final, would you have sacked him? You can't run a club in that way. So I would like to think that third, fourth, fifth makes no difference to any decision that they're going to make. You can have a conversation at the sixth. I think it'd be... some effort to finish the season and come sixth now, but you could have a conversation if that was the case. But I don't necessarily think they'll push it. I think they'll want to finish the season with three wins, though. I think if you can finish the season with three wins, you're able to look at it and go, all right, it's not amazing, but we've won six of our last seven league games there. And finishing on that sort of, not high, but finishing with that run of form, it means you can sort of hang your hat on and go, well, if we start next season like that, everyone feels great. So I think you've just got to not necessarily full throttle go for it, but I think with the circumstances, I think you win against Chelsea. You're then going to Aston Villa, where I think we'll probably play just, you know, the cast of Peaky Blinders or something, to be perfectly honest. But for all the level of interest they're going to have in that game of football, you then beat the two of them, and then you've got Brentford, whose season is potentially done by that point. I don't know how the complexities of that, but they might be like, ah, well, we're already in the Europa League, great, we don't need to do anything here. You get in and get three, but people don't think about it as a, oh, the game didn't matter. They just go, well, we won that. And you'd finish the season a bit more positive. You don't necessarily have to go for it to do that. It can sort of just happen. But it would make a huge difference, I think, if Liverpool were to win the next three games and finish on a little bit of a positive note.
It's like saying it to someone the other day, it's like the 22-23 season, it wasn't great, but was after the international break, that game against Arsenal at Anfield, and he get Klopp and Lindis kind of moved a few bits around, obviously Trent in midfield, and I think they end up winning, was it seven out of the...
We're in seven in a row, don't we?
Yeah, and obviously wasn't enough to get Champions League, but that kind of built through to the next season, and obviously that season ended up being quite good. I know they didn't probably try for the league as long as they should have done, but they started the season really well, and it just kind of shows that can breed confidence, because, you know, if you win your first couple of league games next season, it's like, well, you've won 8 of 10 or something, and that all counts as something, especially, you know, when there's so much kind of dialogue over like the manager's future and stuff. I think if you've got like a solid kind of base, a record behind you, it definitely helps, and it definitely helps people hang the hat on, as Phil says, something over the summer where you can actually think, well, this is what we're going to look like, or this is what we're going to play like, or, you know, proof that the results are there. So, you know, I think if Liverpool can do that between now and the end of the season, especially with, you know, a few players out, it certainly won't do them any harm, will it?
Is it back to win all three, Neil?
No. Because if this, the lesson of the season is that that's...
Is that because you look at a game and don't fancy us, or because you look at three games as a collective and think they can't win all three games?
It's that. It's number two, yeah. Listen, they've done it. They do it three on the bounce. They won three on the bounce recently, and it's worth bearing that in mind. And your point, if they win six of the last seven, they'll do it in two banks of three. So I'm not saying it's impossible, but I just wouldn't quite back them to win all three. No, I just think at the minute, the sadness of Old Trafford, the real shame of Old Trafford, to be honest, was I was... you know, going into it and thinking, I'm really looking forward to seeing Wirtz behind Isak in a game of this magnitude, and we didn't get to see it. I'd love to see Wirtz behind Isak from the start tomorrow against Chelsea, but I just think, you know, there's a few rumours bouncing around that he might be available, Isak, but like, you know, we've discussed, I just sort of feel as though Liverpool will still probably err on the side of caution, and should. I want to be clear, I'm not having a go when I say that, because
does it not depend how cautious they were last weekend, though?
Yeah, it could be that they were very cautious last weekend.
It might have been that there's a world where if we were going for a title or something, that he could have played last weekend.
Yeah, you could be right.
So the caution that you're talking about now might actually have been that they
did. Exactly, it might have been.
No, the thing we don't know, isn't it?
No, we don't know, but I think you could be right. It wouldn't surprise me if that's the case. You know, but there's just a little bit of me that just thinks that it is a bit of a shame that we didn't get to see it, and that we might still not get to see it. I think if we do get to see it, then it's all a little bit different, because I think the whole building on things, part of it, regardless of who's in the dugout, is sort of building on partnerships between players. So, you know, it was, we all said, I think, after the win against Crystal Palace, good win, three really good scorers in a great order. Isak, and the nature of the goals, even Isak to open the score in the way in which he does, which is purely what he brings. That idea of the quality combined with the instinct, you know, is exceptional. Robertson, obviously, with the moment, and grabbing the moment, and it being a wonderful sweeping move. And then Wirtz confirming the win when he's fought for his life for 95 minutes, shown some quality, not enough, but then sticks it in the back of the net to win the game for Liverpool, all felt great. I think, you know, if Liverpool get a win tomorrow against Chelsea, and let's be clear, we are playing the most miserable collection of footballers and the most miserable collection of executives and the most miserable collection of supporters currently in the country. You know, they're currently making Leicester City look like peak fucking Fergie Man United, these pricks. That's what they're in the midst of doing. David Gill, Alex Ferguson, fucking Carlos Queiroz in the bench. That's what Leicester City currently look like in comparison to Chelsea. So, you know, that is where they find themselves. So they'll have some decent names on the pitch, but they've looked thoroughly disinterested. Like, in loads of ways, it's almost in our interest that nothing happens for half an hour.
Do you think a lot of their players are now in World Cup mode?
I think that could be a part of it, but then I was talking to Louis Benavente, and he'll be coming in a minute, and he's a bit like, you think these lads are getting picked for World Cups?
Enzo Fernandez is. Enzo, I see, though. Is.
Yeah. No, could be right, and that could be where it sort of ends up. I think that it's very possible that they do... with any side, even with Van Dijk as the third likeliest scorer, they do stick it in the back of the net against Chelsea. I've got a little sneaky one, by the way, which I very rarely do this sort of thing. Oh, well. But Milos Kerkez hasn't scored a goal for Liverpool yet, and I wonder if has he?
Brighton away.
Yeah. Forget that then. I was about Brentford to say,
two, one. Two.
What's the other one?
Brentford away. Brentford,
yeah.
He scored for our time at Brentford.
What do I know, Phil? Yeah. Made a show with there.
On his right foot. Yeah. I'm all right with it.
He scored seven.
He's fucking prolific, by the sounds of it.
Yeah, against teams beginning BR.
Fucking nightmare.
He's our fourth highest scorer.
Hey, I tell you what, that hungry Brazil game's going to be good,
yeah. I'd completely... Both of those had disappeared from my mind. Brighton's acceptable. It was 2 in the morning in Sydney where I was. So forget that I was going to say, I think he might be due one, but he isn't. I was going to make a big HG one there, you know. It's not. Just, you know, the variance around Kerkez is non-existent, folks. Liverpool can be gifted goals in this game, and, you know, they look dreadful. Liverpool have just got to crash the box, and they can win. And then they can win that, and then they can go and get what they get at Villa. I'm quite agnostic about it, really, and that I just do feel as though a lot of this game is about what Chelsea turns up. It's not even about what Liverpool select, and that's why I struggle with the bouncing into next season. I take your point that we can all say to ourselves...
It's not necessarily true, it's just how people...
Exactly, we can all say to ourselves in August...
You'd look at it in July, August, and go, we lost six the last seven there, and we've signed these players, oh, yeah. Can't. That's all I'm saying. That's
always, yeah.
we'll get Louis in a minute, Phil, but what have you made of Chelsea? Because, I mean, Neil's, you know, mentioned a few kind of stellar names there in terms of people who could at any given moment turn up and turn it on and look, you know, world class. But there's a huge sense of we just don't give a fuck at the minute.
I think it's almost one of the perils of the long-term contracts when you change your manager all the time, because you're a bit like, well, I'm going nowhere and I don't like this manager. So you sort of, it gives the players a real ability to down tools in some respects. And it gives these 7-year contracts, one of the things that probably wasn't mentioned was that it gave the players a hell of a lot of power in terms of how they can behave and stuff like that. And I just, they've been just a mess. It's just uninspiring and not very good. I mean, the fact that João Pedro is the first goal he scored for 6 games or something, I think.
Hell of a goal as well.
It was a brilliant goal, I think. But it's probably best summed up by the fact that after 29 games, they were above us. After 35, they couldn't physically finish above us. And in that 6-game period, we only won 3. Like, that should be borderline impossible to do. Like, we won 3, drew 2 and lost 1, I think. And that might even have been, no, we lost 2 and drew 1. We got 10 points. We didn't play amazingly and we took them out of it in a 6-game spell. That sums everything up about how of a shambles they are in terms of what they do. I think they're missing Pedro Neto as well, who feels like the kind of player who could have probably done our heads in. Can't tell you.
Yeah.
He always seems to turn up at Anfield and do something. I mean, there was the goal he had disallowed in the league winning season, wasn't there? There was a he runs down the wing and puts a ball in for Jimenez when we played them on the last day. He seemed to always do something. So that's probably a
think he's a good player, Phil. But I think he's a good player. But very little sympathy for some of these footballers who go to Chelsea, because invariably, I mean, you see Caicedo obviously turning around.
Element of, because he went from Wolves to that at the age of sort of 24 or something like that. Whereas he, so I can sort of see how that move made sense for him. But there's a lot of these lads where I'm looking at it, I'm like, are you sure this is the right idea?
Exactly.
Are you sure? Like Gittens, for example, from Dortmund. He's playing every week for Dortmund, and then he's looked at that Chelsea side and he's gone, oh, that's a good move for me, that.
Even like Hato went from like a young lad, like 19, was doing well at Ajax and just not really been seen at all, has he?
There's so many of them, Kiefer. I mean, listen, they have found themselves in a cup final. You know, they obviously did the business against Leeds, but, you know, I think Phil's right there. It just feels like an absolute mess. And yes, you can come back to, they've got good players who might just decide to flick a switch and have a good game. It's on the telly, it's against Liverpool. Mm. People might just suddenly feel bang up for it. But if you're handpicking a team or a group of individuals to play, I don't think Chelsea would be that far from your thoughts, to be honest, given what we've seen over the last 6-7 weeks.
Yeah, it's been so miserable, isn't it? I think the last league was against Villa, which was like the start of March. I think the last 3 wins have come in the
FA. They were brilliant that night as well. It was mental.
Yeah.
Yeah, they were brilliant.
I remember watching that and thinking, oh, Chelsea will come third then.
Yeah.
Well, that's the thing, isn't it? It's like, it's probably no surprise that they've done all, I say, they've probably had a favourable draw in the cup as well, but it's probably no surprise that they've turned up in these cup ties where it's like a one-off. But obviously in the league where you've got to show a bit more consistency, be at it every couple of days, you know, playing Tuesday, Saturdays, whatever, it's no surprise that that's probably been their downfall. As Phil said, what's the motivation for the players when they're getting, you know, 7-year contracts, 8-year contracts, and they're getting extended after 12 months, you know, they're getting another year added on. So I think it's just a basket case at the minute, really. It's, you know, you think of all the kind of problems and complaints we've had this season, but you kind of look at Chelsea and it's like how quickly they've fallen, and there's no sign that anyone there has got an idea or a sense of direction of where they want to go. You know, they've got players from like 3 different managers now, 3 different loss of recruitment. Just think every aspect of the club, no one's happy. There's protests with, you know, Strasbourg, the kind of the other club that Blue Co own. You know, the fans at Stamford Bridge aren't happy. It's just mad, isn't it? And I think that's like, this is the perfect game for Liverpool, isn't it? It feels like, you know, obviously a big team, a big club, like in terms of there's a rivalry there, but in terms of if you actually take away the badge, you take away the name, and you just looked at them in terms of, you know, a team who's won once since March the 4th, you'd be rubbing your hands if someone said win that and you qualify for the Champions League. So, you know, not underestimating them by any means. I think, you know, they've got players who can turn off. I think the midfielders on the day can be good, but how often do they come to the boil kind of thing? How often is their day? So I'm sure we'll find a lot out about them at Anfield tomorrow.
There's a thing though where we just said, you know, it'll be great to have Burnley this weekend, but we didn't beat them. And you could say we were playing Tottenham at the perfect time and we didn't fucking beat them either.
So I think
1-0 Chelsea.
Yeah, no, I think it's where, you know.
I mean, it's
we took 3 points off Wolves across two games and made that look like exceptionally hard work in the process across both games. Obviously, we lost one of them in there, and Wolves are very bottom. So I'm very, you know, I'm of the view that it is not in any way, sort of shape or form for this Liverpool side in this season. I just don't think you can do that. And we're getting, you know, we couldn't ask for a better opponent at this moment.
Oh, no, I'm not
saying that.
I think the players might think a little bit of that, but I think if anyone who's watched Liverpool this season knows full well that there's every chance, as Phil said, it could be 1-0 Chelsea. And everyone's going, yeah, fucking saw that coming.
Yeah, so that, and that's sort of where we are at the minute. And I think we've got to accept that. You know, these lads, this would be something I'd be saying if I was the manager today, you know, and maybe it'd be the wrong thing to say because it might make them all a bit miserable, but there'd be a bit of me going, lads, you've got everything to prove here, you know. The last time the perfect opponent strolled into Anfield, you made a complete pig's ear of that. So don't, you know, on the telly, et cetera, when the whole nation thinks, well, this is only going to go one way. And then there's a fella doing a pigeon dance. So you just bear that in mind. I just show them the pigeon dance and go, does anyone want more of this?
Because AI, Cole Palmer, the pigeon dance.
You probably could. Yeah.
We definitely can't.
Yeah, I don't want to. And don't do that if you watch this, because fuck you. Let's just crack on.
Louis Benaventi.
It's Neil Atkinson joined by Louis Benaventi to talk about Chelsea. Have you given up yet? Do you just hate them? How are you feeling ahead of this weekend's game?
Well, I've already written it off. We're not going to win another game for the rest of the season. I'm adamant that's the case.
Okay. Why is that? Is that because everyone's just packed in? Why do you think that is?
Well, I mean, I think when you don't put in a performance against the second string Nottingham Forest team, and there's just doesn't seem to be any resilience left in that team whatsoever, and there's continuous problems off the pitch as well as on the pitch. I mean, this is at Strasbourg as well. I mean, last night watching the Conference League games and then seeing, you know, another new signing in Omega who plays for Strasbourg, you know, going up to the fans that are protesting as the captain of Strasbourg and going, I didn't play, they did, and start pointing at his own teammates.
Yeah.
You just see, I think for me, that was it this morning where I went, okay, there is not an end in sight here, because you've then got the same problems which you've had with some signings happening going into next year. So I am very much in a state of just let's rip it off like a plaster at this point. It's just they don't care, and I'd rather we just play the games, get them done, and then look to refresh and going into the new season and look to refresh upstairs as well as within the squad.
A big part of this is that ultimately there's a lot of chat that these players are now just thinking about their fitness for the World Cup. Mm-hmm. And the World Cup is a much bigger deal to them now at this point than anything that Chelsea can do. Is that fair?
Yeah, but if I was a coach of the World Cup, I wouldn't be picking any of them. Maybe, you know, I realistically, I mean, me and my dad have been having this conversation all season. I don't think Cole Palmer's going to go to the World Cup. He's been poor recently, but I think he's been poor because he rushed back from an injury. He played copious amounts of football over the past sort of 3 years. He's obviously, he's not a one trick pony, but you know, I think he's been figured out a little bit, but also I think he's tired of everything that's going on. It's, you know, he's a player which I think people would look at and expect to go. Enzo Fernandez, I think, will probably just make it, but I don't think he'll play. If he does, he won't be, you know, that important of a player. And now I'm struggling. Cucurella
will go, presumably.
Yeah, Rhys James will be fit enough. And that's it.
Pedro will probably go.
Will he play? I don't know. I mean, there's other options. Like, this is the thing. Like, you look at the amount of money that Chelsea have spent on those players. Are they going to start for all their countries? No. It's the doubling down, which consistently it grates me. It really grates me that they can be this arrogant and stupid, Blueco, and still think they're going to make a return. I mean, if we carry on like this, Neil, you and I won't be talking about the Premier League in a couple of years' time.
I mean, but what's striking to me is I know Liverpool are going to pick a side tomorrow that will have practically no cutting edge, that all of Liverpool's cutting edge is injured or unavailable. But Chelsea will be able to pick. Whether or how these players play is a separate matter, and I think this is your point. But Chelsea's front four will be Palmer, Fernandes, Pedro and Delap. Won't it?
It'll probably be Pedro Neto, João Pedro.
Neto will make it.
I mean, yeah, probably. The fact that Jesse Doherty was given an opportunity on the left-hand side says everything you need to know about Chelsea's distinct lack of options on the left. But he was pole-axed by a Nottingham Forest defender, so he won't be available. So you're looking at either Garnacho or Neto on the left, Palmer on the right, João Pedro up front, and probably Enzo Fernandez just in behind.
But that's more cutting edge than Liverpool are going to put on the pitch.
On paper.
Yeah, and this is the point. This is.
But in practice, they've scored one goal in seven games in the Premier League.
An overhead kick,
which, by the way, I didn't even... Everyone was going mental, like, what a goal, it's amazing! And I'm kind of just stood there a bit like, we're 3-1 down to Nottingham Forest, and you're like, what? How can you celebrate? I don't care how good it is. Like, this is not something which you kind of... It's just, yeah. I mean, It was technically a great goal. Technically. But I'm just so emotionally and mentally drained watching the team on the pitch, and then mentally drained by the abhorrent and embarrassing behaviour above them that continues to be allowed by owners who have no clue what they're talking about, but will go to Bloomberg and say they've done an excellent job. If
we get a result tomorrow, I'll be amazed.
It's just out of interest, is a result a draw?
Yeah. Even if we get a result. Like, we need to win. We need to win, but we're not going to. So if I'm just going to look at a result, I don't think we've won at Anfield for a very long time in the league. Like, I was there when we won in the cup, when, you know, Hazard made Moreno look silly, but, you know, that was the cup. In the league, is it Gerrard? Isn't the Gerrard slips the last time we won? Because I can't remember for the life of me if there's been one more recently. Because it's a tough place for us to go anyway.
I think part of all of this, though, is, as I say, I think these are two sides at the minute who find themselves in different ways. I think this is important. I think there's comparisons that can be made as to how the seasons have played out for both sides, but I don't think it's fair to sort of act as though, you know, I think Liverpool have got issues, but I don't think Liverpool feel as top to bottom broken, which is what you're talking about, as Chelsea do at this point. You won in the COVID season. You won in the COVID season.
Okay.
The last time I think you won with fans present was November 14, when Mourinho was manager in the start of the 14-15 season. But you won the COVID season and in 14.
If we go with fans, right? The COVID season counts, but, you know, let's go with fans.
No, it doesn't.
That also your league doesn't count, does it?
That league was won.
Yeah, I mean, look, the fact you're going 12 years without fat and sly, okay, right, well, you know, that's already mentally a write-off for me, especially in the form we're in. If this was 6 months ago, I'd go, well, Chelsea are going to be really poor against Burnley and Leeds, but I tell you what, when it comes down to the big games, they'll turn up. I just don't think these guys will turn up tomorrow, and there seems to be on the training pitch as well, and in within the club, there's just a massive disconnect. No one is happy. And it's just spilling over now. I stood there after the Forest game, and obviously at the Brighton game as well. I mean, Enzo Fernandez, Cucurella,
Caicedo, those guys, they came over and just kind of looked at us and a bit like we don't know what to do. But then after that Forest game, I looked onto the pitch and I saw five or six players just like staring into the middle distance with hands on hips. They're going, they don't know what's going on. And it's just, there's nothing in that team for me with, you know, put it this way, I coached against the assistant coach of Chelsea currently because he doesn't have his coaching badges needed to coach at this level. And I beat him. That's what we're dealing with at the minute. We're dealing with people that don't have the qualifications to do it. And I hire coaches for my business that are more qualified than these guys. And as much as I love those guys, they'd say, "Chel, they're not qualified to take on the Chelsea job." So this nepotism that's kind of gone through the club with just signing from Brighton or just signing from City's academy or just signing from this Kinetic Sports Academy for the coaches in the academy. And then even after that Nottingham Forest loss, they put out a press brief and they go, "Oh, we're actually seeing a lot of progress across the men's, women's and youth teams because we're all playing the same style of football now." So that fills us with a lot of confidence. And I'm going, you're playing the same style of football that the person you based it on has moved away from, firstly. And secondly, every single one of those parts of your business has got worse. So why are they celebrating abject mediocrity? And it's not just that, it's celebrating what is going to get worse. Notwithstanding as well, not failing to mention that we have a similar relationship between the two owners that we've got currently that you had before FSG came in. And look where that put you guys. Add that to 1.8 billion spent, add that to a terrible youth policy, add that to a multi-club model that doesn't work. We've got the problems that five clubs have had over the past 20 years happening all at once. And that just screams relegation to me. It screams it. Especially when they can't even, like, I didn't really want Iraola, even I think he's a good coach. And obviously, he looks like he's going to be going to Crystal Palace. And good on him for that decision, by the way, because, you know, that's, you know, career suicide coming to Chelsea currently. But if you can't attract Andoni Iraola and your other options, Marco Silva, and you're saying you want to become a regular Champions League club, that should answer your questions about the thought processes of these people.
Okay, good stuff from Louis. Let's get back over to Ian.
So, Neil, what do you reckon in terms of how Chelsea line up? They are missing a couple, as you said before we came on air, maybe not quite as many as people think. How do you see it looking at the weekend?
I think they'll play 4-3-3. Probably Palmer off the right, Pedro off the left, that big plum of the lap through the middle. Looking forward to watching him play for Everton next season.
And then Gavin will do him, you know.
He's going to score against us at the Hill Dickinson next season, but it's fine because we're going to win because we won there the first time and we're going to win next year as well. So don't worry, Phil. It's consolation. And then in amongst it, then I think that then they'll have three midfielders, Enzo, Caicedo, and I think probably Reece James because he's available. They want to get him on the pitch, but they'll also want to get Custo on the pitch. He's available. Cucurella, who looks like he's really phoning it in at this point, to be honest, will start at left back, and then it'll be probably Colwill if they fancy him, because I think they'd like, the one positive you would say for them conceivably is, could they get three games out of Colwill between now and the end of the season, because he's important for them, and it's probably Shalabah next to him. Whenever I catch Chelsea, I always think he does all right. Like, he's the one who I always think, he must look around that dressing room at times and think, I hate all of you. Shalabah looks, will it be Jorgensen in goal? So it'll just look a bit like this from Liverpool's point of view. You know, where do you end up? If it's no Isak, then, or not from the start, then I think I would, Kiefer was saying before, I would start Rio and Ngamoah. I just think it helps, and I think it gives them an out ball on the left-hand side, and it lets you do the little thing where you have Gakpo and Wirtz almost play on the same line, and it makes that make a bit more sense. And then you, Ngamoah one side, and I think you've just got a cop for Frimpong on the other side, and it's thankless. You know, there's a lot of criticism from a number of places, including me, frankly. But I think someone needs to play right-hand side.
If Isak was available, who would you do on the right?
I think I'd do Ngamoah on the right.
On the right.
That's what I think I'd do, yeah. To Gakpo on the left, or I'd do Isak through the middle with Vieta behind. Is that what you'd do?
I think probably, yeah.
Yeah. And then I think you've got Frimpong as a sub, which is no bad thing for either Ngamoah or for right-back if you feel as though you want to go in that direction. And then I'd start Jones at right-back again, myself. I'd do... So Boslai and Gravenberg in the heart of the midfield. I'd try and get Kerkers on the pitch, not because he's due one, but because I think you're going to want to start Robertson against Brentford, and I think that Kerkers should have another route at Anfield in a big game between now and the end of the season. He's the man who's got the position going forward. And two lads at centre-half, and any goalkeeper who fancies it. That's, you know, I'd like to have more of a sense of the goalkeeper, but I don't know.
Goalkeeper-wise, Phil, I mean, Alisson's, it's a bit of a weird one. I mean, this seems to happen an awful lot when he's coming back from injury. You think he's going to be fit and fine. You know, go back to it, the manager's not done his press conference yet, but, you know, leading into the Man United game, it felt like he might be touch and go. And no fuck has seen him since. So, in terms of... Would you?
Yeah.
So it feels like he probably won't. He won't be involved. But you know, there are rumours that maybe Liverpool can get the number two keeper rather than the number three keeper playing at the weekend. And that you'd have to say that will probably be a boost, albeit not everyone's quite convinced.
No, I don't think they are. I think people have probably been a little bit harsh on him to some extent. I think his kicking gets criticised, and I'm watching people pass the ball to his right foot, and every time he has to kick the ball. Pretty much, he has to put it onto his left foot, and then by the time he's looked up, there's someone in his face, and he's basically just got to empty it, and that doesn't help. I think the thing with Alisson is you're probably past the point where the reliability has gone too far. I think he's failed to start 30. I think he's failed to play 30 league games in the last three seasons. Now,
do you think he definitely goes, Phil? I mean, the rumours are gathering a bit of pace. There was the Juventus thing again the other day.
A lot of smoke, isn't there? I think it just kind of makes sense, to be honest. I think there's people going, well, if it's all right, if he only plays 70-75% of games, and I just completely disagree. I think it's destabilising when you lose a goalkeeper. It doesn't matter how good your second choice is, it's destabilising because it completely... the defenders have got to have trust in the man behind them and know exactly what he's going to do. And if two different people are doing different things on a week-to-week basis, it's not healthy. You can't control when he's playing in these games. You're basically told, well, he can't play this game. Like, he couldn't play away at PSG. It doesn't help, does it? Like, he might well have saved the first goal that was deflected by having different position, and that's not a slight on Mamadash, really. It just might have been a bit different in terms
of... He couldn't start away at PSG because he got away with Brazil, come back, started at Man City. You can control a little bit with...
I don't think they started someone away at Manchester City in the FA Cup is a problem. If you can't do that, then that's not... having to manage someone in that situation, I don't think that's good.
But Manchester City, almost certainly, I can't be 100% off the top of my head, but I'm pretty sure James Trafford started
quite possibly, but...
And I would start the second-choice goalkeeper in domestic cups, and I think there's an argument in general to not start anyone who travels to South America and back after an international break. So these are choices that currently... both this manager and the previous manager, frankly, have not made.
But I don't think you should have to do this with a goalkeeper.
Ben
Leno at Fulham, I know it's a completely different kettle of fish, start about 150 games in a row.
Yeah,
The goalkeeper should not be in a position where you need to look after their legs.
But this is in the context of talking about the summer's business. And I think in the round, I do sort of agree with you. But in a summer where we said before, when you started the show, Liverpool are going to have a load to do.
Yeah.
If you were able to box clever to get one more year out of an exceptional goalkeeper, but you accept you've got to box clever in the first place to an extent, because I don't think we box clever. And I think it's perfectly valid to say, I don't think we boxed. There's been games he's played that I don't think he should have played or had to play. I think there's been a period where I don't think it's smart, full stop, for the whole club as a policy to say you've just come back from South America, you're starting first thing Saturday morning for any of them. So I am a little of the view, you know, you can pick the games a little bit. I take your overarching point.
I would agree for a left winger or something, or a centre mid. I just can't have it that you need to manage a goalkeeper in that way.
In a normal summer where I didn't think you were trying, like, for instance, let's say we do this summer really well, and there's talk of it all again. You just take me hypothetical, just run with it. Liverpool are going to do three bits of transfer business. I could be more swayed by the arguments of, well, all right, now you do that bit of surgery in a big way, and you've got a full plan for it, and you execute it.
But also at the same time, the goalkeeper you want might only be available this summer. So what'd you do then?
Yeah, I just don't... I mean, that's fine. I could be wrong. I just don't see an outstanding candidate.
We don't buy the players. We can say outstanding or whatever, but they might have a situation where it's like, this is the goalkeeper we want for the next 10 years. Let's just hypothetically say it's James Trafford. But James Trafford's going to Newcastle or Aston Villa or something.
That's it. No, that's it.
And you can step in and get him. It makes sense to do that. That's plucked a name out the air there. By the way, it's nothing. No insights or anything. But I just think that going through a season where you know that your goalkeeper is going to miss a quarter of your games, I think it's really problematic.
The thing is, Kiefer, I mean, I take Neil's point, and I'm not saying I'd do anything different, because I think there's a case to be made, kind of both sides, really, you know, to keep a goalkeeper of that class around. Of course, it's ticking boxes, but I think Phil makes a valid point as well. When you think about how important that position is, you know, it's such an important position. You know, Carragher will often go on Monday Night Football and say things like, you can't win a Premier League without a top goalkeeper. Is Mamardashvili that top goalkeeper? If he has to play more than he doesn't, is he good enough to kind of make that number one position his own, do you think?
Probably based on this season, it don't really something I could properly answer. I think clearly, you know, they liked what they saw in him. Obviously, they've done a deal 18 months ago to bring him in. But I don't think we've seen enough of him in the right kind of circumstances and environment to kind of make a, you know, to pass judgment on him. And you saw even with Keller, like at times when he came in, you know, when you are kind of coming in at short notice here and there, it is quite hard to, you know, as Phil says, build a relationship with players, you know, even if it's a silly thing as, you know, which foot are you? You know, that can make your life, that can make the position of standing as a goalkeeper much harder than it needs to be.
We fucking tried our best as well, in fairness.
Yeah, pretty good. Possibly, Mamardash really is back in training.
There you go.
So is Isak.
Yeah, well, that's good. But I think long-term, I think clearly there is a talented goalkeeper in there. But I think you'd have to see him over a prolonged period of games against top opposition. And, you know, when he's almost like coaching the defence as his own, and he's got that trust of the two centre-backs.
That's when a team that isn't a general shambles.
Well, exactly it must be helpful, so hard as a new player to come in and a team's, you know, just a complete, not met, but it was a mess for the first half of the season, wasn't it? And, but I think he kind of ticks the boxes. But as I say, I'd like to see him over a prolonged period. But I think the thing with Alisson is that, you know, that my worry is that there's a lot of, I think the culture is kind of a big word that's been used recently. And, you know, Salah's done interviews and Robertson's hinted at it as well. And, you know, Van Dijk said in the FA Cup quarter final against City that they gave up. And so I think if you were to move on all those kind of big hitters, the kind of the last big hitters left are the kind of the Champions League winning and the Premier League winning sides, I would be wary of doing that. Just because I think to lose Salah, you know, he's been your standard setter for the last, you know, 10 years. Robertson has done it in a different way. I think Van Dijk has been your captain. He's probably got less than 2 years left at the club. And then I think if you just get Alisson as well, I think get rid of him, I think that could be not detrimental, but I would just worry what the makeup of the squad looks like. If this team, which is a young and a fairly inexperienced team compared to the players they're replacing, I think you do need players. You know, you look at when Klopp came in, he had players like Jordan Henderson and James Milner, and, you know, Milner had been a serial winner at City, and Henderson was almost like that standard bearer day in, day out. I think you do need those players, and even if they aren't playing every week, they still have a vital role to play. So that would kind of be my one concern, maybe away from the pitch, because I think in terms of what you're getting from Alisson on the pitch at the moment, I think he's clearly on the decline, which obviously happens with age, but also in terms of his availability, it feels like it's getting, you know, it feels like it's getting worse every year.
Plus that this is his lowest save percentage of his Liverpool career as well. I think it's like 60-something percent, which is
first time at four below 60%. So I think
it's not ideal, is it?
Would you start Cassius Jones right back?
Yeah, I think so. I think I wouldn't be averse to seeing Frimpong home in a game where we're expecting the opposition to not be quite on it, and they're missing two wingers as well, aren't they? Like, Garnacho's out as well. So if you take Garnacho and Neto out, they are a bit weaker out there. So maybe you could be a bit aggressive on that side. But if it was, I'm fine with Jones as well. I think there's an argument you could just look at Frimpong in terms of how the game should be, especially on that area of the pitch, and try and just get a bit of pace in that particular wide area. I'd be perfectly fine with either of them, though, in all honesty.
And now we know Isak's training, you think he'll start central, do you want to have him off the bench, they'll start and maybe go for maybe 60, do you think he'll
they start him and see how it is at half time, and if he's all right, you go till 60, maybe you can get 70. Like, as I said earlier, we don't necessarily know how cautious last week was. Like, it's one of those, you don't know how injured someone is. Like they said, he went for a scan. Well, the scan's clearly not showing a great deal. So was it just an excessive level of caution with someone who is coming back from a long-term injury that you have to manage them through it to some extent? Or was he, you know, in a great deal of pain and it's just subsided now and you've got to manage it? You just don't know. But I would look to start and based on what I do know.
And then go Gakpo left, Rio on the right. Would you do that?
Yeah, I think I'd do that. I mean, I think Ngamo would make Frimpong's life a lot easier as well. Frimpong would make Ngamo's life a lot easier as well and create him bit of space. Like, imagine if, you know, a defender's one-on-one with Ngamo and knows he can go inside or outside, but there's also a really fast lad running down the outside. It sounds a bit simplistic, but it's something for probably Cucurella to think about and, yeah, just try and hit them with a bit of pace, because if they're not fully bought into it, pace is probably one of the most dangerous assets you can have.
Think they might be tempted to give Will Wright any minutes, Neil? I mean, he's not going to obviously kind of feature for long, you wouldn't imagine. He's only obviously... Well, he's not long after club, has he? But apparently he's been doing well. Within the 23s, I think it was. 6'3", certainly a presence. Knows where the goal is, by all accounts. Could you see a scenario where maybe he comes on, gets 5 or 10 minutes, or do you think it's purely down to game state?
And that's purely down to game state. I think if they're comfortable, they might think, let's have a little look and give him a chance and also helping them back. I think there is a bit of a thing where Liverpool could do with having a sub that makes, you know, let's say the game... So this isn't an argument to say don't bring him on if Liverpool are 2-1 up. Quite the opposite, in a way. I think that there's nothing wrong with Liverpool having someone who's going to go and play on the shoulder and who's just going to run off. I don't think you necessarily want him and Rio Ngamo on the pitch at the same time, because, you know, you need to keep that sort of shape. But if you were to just almost say to a player with pace, your interest is the halfway line and we want you just to make line-breaking runs, it means that they've got to go, well, someone needs to worry about this fella coming the other way. And we haven't had much of that, I think, late in games this season, and I think it's been a bit counterproductive. So I'm not averse to it at all. I think it's a big step, but I'm fine. I'd be quite all right with it in a couple of different environments, obviously. And if we're comfortably ahead, then, you know, there's an argument to look at that as well. So yeah, I'm fine with it, really. I think maybe the state you don't do it in is if the game is level, because I don't think you want the onus of the idea that he's got to go and stick it in the back of the net or anything like that. I think what you want instead is,
you need to be 2-0 up, don't you, really?
I think 2-0 up, and then they're putting a bit of pressure on.
Yeah.
And then you feel as though you can run in behind, and that gives them just a really simple job. Just come on, just keep testing the centre-backs, use your movements, use your pace, use your size, and just see if you can rattle them a little bit. And I think that's fine if you're 2-0 up. I think it becomes a little bit different if, as I say, if the game's level, I think it's hard to see him coming on.
How do you see the game going?
I think it's going to be dreadful.
Great news.
If Isak starts, I'll feel hugely differently at the immediately, and that's probably quite reductive from me. But if we're in a situation where it's Frimpong right and Rio left with Gakpo and Wirtz, I think Liverpool will need to play well to make it a decent game. I think they're just so unpredictable coming into this. I think there's a chance that they really are just effectively playing dead for a lot of the game, because they can't be bothered to such an extent.
The Villa result does keep them slightly interested, though, in the sixth place, though.
There's the sixth place thing for them to be interested in, and there's also just in general, there's playing at Anfield and playing with a bit of pride. And, you know, I think one of the things that did us in when the Tottenham thing happened was that it'd been so bad the week before that it was almost like your team talk is, lads, you can't be doing this again because it's embarrassing. It's not a complicated team talk. That do not embarrass this football club. It's not on the telly, please, at Anfield, worldwide. It's not a complicated team talk. And that's what worries me, is they turn up and they're determined not to be embarrassed. And then what happens is a couple of things go well for them and they're having a nice enough time. But there's a universe where it's a really dire game between a Chelsea side that doesn't want to know, and a Liverpool side that's got no cutting edge, and Trevor Chalobah trying his best.
Bless him.
And that's what we've all got to sort of put up with. If Isak starts, I will be bouncing into Anfield, and I'm a simple man.
So what you reckon?
I've broadly aligned with what Neil said. I think
they'll win.
I think we will win, yeah, because I think they sort of will have the carrot dangled in front of them. I think it's sort of slightly reminiscent of the last, you know, the 2021 season and the 2022-23 season, where it's not the same players, but the idea is broadly the same. I think in both of those seasons there was a period where it's like, oh, we can't win the league here, and they sort of drop off, and then they sort of pick it up towards the end when they see something on the horizon that that they might be able to get. I mean, you think about 22-23, I think if we'd have beaten Villa in the second last game, we probably would have got Champions League football, because I think we'd then go to Southampton the next week and we draw 4-0 in the game that was irrelevant to everyone. We probably would have won those that game as well and actually got the extra points that we required. So when they do see it, they can sort of lift themselves to go, well, okay, I actually don't want to be playing in the Europa League next season. I know that didn't necessarily happen 22-23, but they did their damnedest for the last 2 months of the season to try and ensure that it didn't happen once the bad stuff had all, you know, got to the end of it. So you do look at it and think, I would expect them to just sort of turn up and be a bit like, hang on, lads, we can get this done now, and things become a bit easier from next week. And I think we'll win, to be honest.
3 points?
You hope so. I think it's to echo what the lad said, it depends on who's starting, doesn't it? What cutting edge you have. I think if Isak's there, I think that just gives everyone a huge lift. In the same way, I think Ngamoa does, if he starts, he's someone you think, well, you want to get him on the ball, and that just kind of gives the crowd a lift as well. And I think, you know, he's going to look to get their fullbacks, you know, right from the off. I think it just sets the tone that you want to be front footed, you want to get at Chelsea. It largely depends on what the team sheet says, but I think you'd think so. I think, like I said, if you take kind of the crest and the name away, I think if you were to look at Chelsea on paper, they are just, I mean, we talk about all the issues we've had, but they are just in free fall, aren't they? And clearly a group of players who just have no kind of motivation behind them. You know, you can talk about maybe sneaking into the Champions League, but I think even to get they've got the game against Tottenham as well, so I think they've got 4 games left, haven't they? So I think they'd have to win all their games. I just can't see them doing that. I think 2-1 Liverpool. I feel like Mark Lawrence said, I've never ever predicted Liverpool to lose on the show, but I think Isak and then obviously Kirk has his dual goal, so there we are. That's the one.
Into the needle, I like it. That has been the pre-match warm-up. Thank you to the boys this side of the camera and behind the cameras. We'll see you soon.